This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Troy Antic. Last Sunday, August 19th, was World Humanitarian Day. And in light of that, we'll be doing a series of shows over the next 4 weeks with people from Mercy Malaysia to better understand the work they do, as well as the challenges of moving towards humanitarian development. On this first episode, I have with me, to help define what humanitarian action is, the president of Mercy Malaysia, Dr. Ahmad Faizal Perdaus. Dr. Faizal, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So, you've called this the age of the humanitarian crisis in the past. How would you like for us to observe this World Humanitarian Day? What is the message?
Well, first of all, the World Humanitarian Day was founded to commemorate a tragic incident, actually. So it's a very solemn event. The UN, the United Nations, which technically, as a choice, made it mandatory for all its humanitarian agencies to observe this day officially, commemorated August 19th, because in 2003, the UN head of operations in Baghdad was killed together with about 20 other of his staff in a tragic bombing which took place on that very day. On this day, Mercy Malaysia, as well as all other humanitarian agencies globally, observes this day by reflecting most of the time on the work that we do and on the people whom we serve. How would we like this day to be observed? We would ideally want this day to be observed by everyone throughout the world, not just by humanitarian workers, not just by humanitarian professionals, but also by people who are normal, me and you in the street. For that to happen, though, we understand fully that the onus is on organizations like ours to also instill and create awareness and increase the visibility of this day and the principles behind it. So on this note, we have taken it upon ourselves, Mercy Malaysia, in Malaysia at least, to at least lead in the commemoration of this day, if not in a big way, at least in a modest way. And hopefully over the years, it will become a day that everyone in Malaysia and in this part of the world will remember, as much as in other more perhaps developed parts of the world.
Mm-hmm. The work that you do, you've been very busy in the past few weeks. After what happened in Laos and now in Lombok, maybe I can get you to give us an update on what's been going on to help us understand the kind of work that you do.
Thank you. So in Laos and Lombok, we've been responding for the last 3 weeks now. After August 19th, now we are. And for the last 3 weeks or so, we have sent multiple teams to both Laos and Lombok. In both Laos and Lombok, we've had access to the sites that are affected directly. This is because Mercy Malaysia has official status with ASEAN as an official partner with the ASEAN Humanitarian Center, the AHA Center in Jakarta, as well as with our local partners in both countries. In Laos, we've been given special permission by the government of Laos to operate, and we've been conducting both medical as well as hygiene and water and sanitation programs together with the next phase of operations in Laos, which are psychosocial programs especially targeted at children who've been affected by the floods. Now, if there were more funding and if there was more support in Laos, we would actually like to take this opportunity to also help the government, which actually has requested us to continue with some of these programs mid to long term. This is because, of course, Laos has been a little bit neglected in the wave of development that has overtaken ASEAN and this region of Southeast Asia in particular over the last two decades or so. Laos has been quite left behind, actually, in terms of development. Now, not that Mercy Malaysia will be going into full-scale development work, but there are areas where humanitarian action bridges the gap to more development, especially in areas of health, water sanitation and hygiene, as well as other more immediate needs, like nutrition, for example, for mothers and children. In Lombok, we have had a big operation with regards to both water supply as well as shelters. Again, If funds were permitting and with more support from generous Malaysians especially, we would like to do more. In Lombok, we have been working very closely with partners, and we are especially grateful to both the ASEAN Centre for Humanitarian Action, the AHA Centre, as well as our biggest local partner, PKPU in Indonesia, for working together with us and allowing us access to the site. In Lombok, because of the preparedness and the increased awareness of the Indonesian population in general and the people of Lombok in particular, you've seen how, although they've been devastated by a series of earthquakes and by a lot of aftershocks which came in between the three earthquakes that hit them, the number of casualties have actually been relatively low compared to, say, a decade ago. And this is because the Indonesians are better well prepared. And this is another area of work which Mercy Malaysia hopes to continue with in Lombok, where after the recovery phase is over, we are now into the early recovery phase after the emergency phase already, we'll be looking at how to build more resilient communities in Lombok as well.
Right. So just by that brief, the work that you do is multifocal, multi-prong. How would you define what a humanitarian act is? Because over the course of the next few weeks, we're going to discuss, you know, what happens after the crisis struck. You know, who stays back. We're going to talk about funding as well. But humanitarian work, how would you define it? Is it possible to have a single succinct definition?
There are many definitions, and I'd like to be as brief as possible. The easiest definition is, of course, humanitarian action is the act of helping another human being in need, in distress. Now, however, organized humanitarian action means that we are providing relief to fellow human beings in the event of a major calamity, either natural or man-made. What is a calamity and what is major differs from site to site, from country to country, from situation and context to context. It can vary from conflicts to natural disasters to man-made calamities which are not conflict in nature. For example, biochemical accidents, etc. Lately, of course, the world has also been at risk of more climate change born calamities, which are not usually in the past, which were not usually in the past classified as natural disasters. In the US now, for example, you have great wildfires consuming large parts of Northern California, which has grown both in intensity, severity, as well as frequency. So the act of humanitarian action also depicts a kind of noble cause to it. And this means that we give more than we take, which is true most of the time. And it is usually, in the international humanitarian sector at least, it is based on four very big principles, which are impartiality, neutrality, serving the humanitarian imperative ahead of others, yeah, and humanity, meaning we give priority to these principles, and that aid is given without care for colour, creed, religion, political affiliation. That, in a nutshell, is what humanitarian action is. Organized, it can be very effective and very impactful. And for it to be better and even more impactful, it has to be coordinated. And I guess both at national, regional, as well as international levels, and at the highest levels, at the global level, humanitarian action is best done and very impactful if it's organized and coordinated. That doesn't take away, though, the essence of the action, which is sometimes individual. And Mercy Malaysia, being an organization which was born out of a dream almost 20 years ago now, understands very much. And we don't want to take this dream factor away and this vision and passion away. There are many individuals out there, including very good people here in Malaysia, who want to do more to help others. I think as a principle, we stand by them and we encourage them to do so. But it's just that sometimes when there is a need to give and there is a need to do so in a major crisis like the ones we are seeing in Lombok and Laos, it is best done if it's organized.
You said most of the time humanitarian organizations give more than they take. When is the other way around? Does it mean that things have went wrong?
Well, most of the time, when I said that, it means that we will do more than is expected of us in a non-crisis situation. We will do more than what we would expect of what an ordinary person would do if it wasn't a disaster. A person may work longer hours, may work more acutely, more intensely. A person may give up some comforts of life, you know, like if you go to the field and you may not have a proper shower for 3 days or proper food for a couple of days. All these are elements of sacrifice, I guess, which is essential in return action, apart from those four principles which I mentioned just now: impartiality, neutrality, the humanitarian imperative, and humanity. But there's also another aspect to it, which is we also would listen more and care more for what the beneficiaries want, what the affected population wants, rather than what we want. Now, this is an area of giving more than taking, which some humanitarians, both individuals as well as organizations, sometimes miss. The idea of giving more than we take is sometimes very associated with volunteerism, which is not untrue. But this aspect of actually giving what is needed and listening to the affected population and actually serving their needs and not ours is sometimes missed. And we have instances in humanitarian action whereby people, although with good intent and very good-naturedly, both individuals and organizations, give things which the affected population don't really need. And this varies according to place and context, of course. And sometimes it's time-based. What you would need 24 hours after an earthquake would probably be different with what you need a week later. And what you need 24 hours after being bombed is also different from what you need 48 hours after a flood. So sometimes humanitarian individuals as well as organizations need to take note of this this element of accountability to those who are affected.
Okay. We'll come back after this short break to talk more about these challenges as well as go through some misconceptions of what humanitarian work entails. I'm speaking today to Dr. Ahmad Faizal Pedaus, President of Mercy Malaysia. We're talking about what defines humanitarian action. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antik. With me on the show today, Dr. Ahmad Faizal Pedaus, President of Mercy Malaysia. Last Sunday, August 19, was World Humanitarian Day. And so we are going to be talking over the next few weeks on a weekly basis, the work that humanitarian workers do, as well as the challenges of delivering humanitarian aid. Mercy Malaysia was, as you mentioned before the break, born out of a dream back in the early 2000s. And today, you mentioned the challenges briefly, how much it's evolved. A lot of, I guess, the work that needs to be done better is coordination. How much is what you're doing today deviated or evolved since that dream was started or that dream was conceived? What is Mercy Malaysia going to be focused on going forward?
Well, first of all, we were founded in June 1999 at the tail end of the Balkans War during the Kosovo crisis. And I must qualify what I'm going to say with the fact that the entire humanitarian landscape has also changed in the last 19, 20 years or so. It has changed both in terms of the focus areas a little bit, as well as the way crises are and the way crises have developed over the last 20 years or so. There's also, of course, been the more intense frequency and severity of some forms of natural disasters. And of course, the evolution brought about by the information and communication technology revolution. All that put together has also come with some realizations in the humanitarian sector. For example, on the need for better preparedness and for the need to realize the vision of a more resilient global community as well as more resilient affected communities, having more localized action in response to, especially to natural disasters, but also to conflicts. All these have meant that the landscape of the entire humanitarian community internationally has also changed. There's also been an influx of new players. faith, there are more faith-based organizations of all faiths. Governments now are more are better equipped. And in some countries, they have learned very well from past disasters, and they are much more resilient, both in terms of their government structure as well as communities. Now, with all that, Mercy Malaysia has had to evolve as well. We started very much as a group of backpacking, good intention friends doing good. That evolved quickly into a very spirited and passionate core of volunteers coming together to form an organization which focused on medical relief, especially in emergencies, and later branched out into humanitarian aid. Over the years, we have evolved into a professional international humanitarian relief organization, very proudly Malaysian, although we have an international flavor, and born and bred here, which is not the easiest thing to do, I must say, because the sector is not very well developed in Malaysia. And on top of that, we've also managed to retain some of the idealism and the spirit and the passion of our founders and the past, especially the spirit of volunteerism. A lot of international humanitarian relief organizations now don't have volunteers to speak of. We are one of very few who still have a very large core of volunteers whom we utilize and are actually our biggest assets when it comes to, especially when it comes to quick response and to emergency responses. But over the 19 years, Mercy Malaysia has also not just done emergency medical relief. We still do health as its entirety, as a sector, as a main focus area. We've also gone very much into water sanitation and hygiene, and this includes the supply of clean water, the provision of sanitation facilities, toilets, etc. in some parts of the world, even in Malaysia, even in some in interior parts of the peninsula, as well as in Sabah and Sarawak, as well as a big focus on disaster risk reduction, disaster preparedness and emergency response preparedness, which has culminated also in the realization of a concept called Building Resilient Communities, which now represents about 10 to 20% of the work that we do on an annual and daily basis. And in terms of relief, we've also gone into providing shelters, and we've also developed a niche area in rebuilding and rehabilitating health facilities and health systems in countries especially which have been overwhelmed by both natural disasters and conflict. So these are some of the areas that we focused on. Going forward, we see the need for us to work more closely with not just international partners but also with local partners. As I said, localization is one theme that has caught on in the international humanitarian sector over the last 5 to 10 years especially. And this means that there is more and more local involvement. Our operations in Cox's Bazar, huge as it is for the Rohingya refugees, involves a lot of interactions and partnerships with local organizations, without which it would be very much less effective. Throughout ASEAN, we work very well with the ASEAN Centre for Humanitarian Action, the AHA Centre. But we also work very well with local partners in all the countries in ASEAN which we serve. In Malaysia, we work very, very closely with both government authorities, local councils, etc., but also now with community organisations and smaller local NGOs to help us build more resilient communities. So this is going forward. We see also that there may be a need for Mercy Malaysia to even to fine-tune even more and develop further niche areas. Psychosocial programming, for example, is one area of strength for us. It is relatively cheap. The need for mental health support has been shown to be necessary in both natural and conflicts, natural disasters and conflicts. We've also been looking very, very hard at providing more and more work in urban settings, both in humanitarian as well as building resilient communities. So these are some of the areas that we are looking forward to as we go forward.
All this work requires sustained, prolonged engagement with all the stakeholders. And you mentioned the fact that it's a maturing industry. Do the public know or appreciate that this is not a once a week or once a month as you mentioned, volunteerism, kind of doing it for yourself rather than giving more than receiving. Do you find yourself still having to go through a lot of that in terms of promoting humanitarian principles?
Oh, yes. And first of all, we usually start with our internal stakeholders, our own volunteers and even our staff. As you can well imagine, we also, like any other organization, have a turnover of people sometimes among our professional staff and also among our volunteer corps. We have new volunteers coming on board all the time. And even with the more senior and seasoned volunteers, they need constant refreshing of ideas and of concepts and principles. As well as our staff, we don't have a large staff compared to other big international NGOs, but we do have a significant one here in Malaysia, which also, again, sees some turnover, and we need to inculcate these values from the beginning. So that's where we start. Then, with our stakeholders, our partners, the public especially, yes, we need to dissect it at different levels. So for one thing, again, as I said, we stand by individuals, any individual who wants to do good. There's nothing wrong in that. It's just that he or she must realize that sometimes there comes a time when you cannot do it alone, yourself, on your own, and doing it alone might even cause more harm than good. That's when you may want to join forces or pool your resources with others, etc. It doesn't mean you have to do your work solely with any particular organization, definitely not only with Mercy Malaysia. We're just one of a few in this country and one of many globally. And so what is important then is to realize our contributions have its manifestations, both good and sometimes maybe not so good, and there are limits to what we can achieve. That's number one. Second, of course, is the fact that this principle of accountability to the affected population, the affected people, must come first also, which is something which needs to be realized, that it's not what we want to get out of this that is most important, this act. It's what the impact on those who are suffering. That's the most important. And that's where, I guess, we need to do more public awareness campaigns, realize the gap between those who know and those who don't about all these things that are related to humanitarian action. And going to the humanitarian principles, which you mentioned. Now, these are very ideal principles, and they were formed more than 150 years ago. And the International Committee of the Red Cross, which are the so-called guardians of these humanitarian principles, still regard them as sacrosanct, as they were 150 years ago. But the reality is the world has changed, and we need to dissect, and we also need to explain to people why are these principles so important in humanitarian action. And we need to let the public, as well as other stakeholders, like the government, for example. Governments in Malaysia, we have both federal and state governments. We need to engage them and impress upon them that humanitarian action needs to be done according to these principles for the greater good, for public good. And I must say, taking this opportunity a little bit, I guess, that hopefully with the dawn of a new Malaysia, after the last general elections, we hope that going forward, Malaysia being more open and more progressive, we'll be able to accept that these principles are there for the greater good. So when you give aid, it should be impartial. The givers of aid should remain as neutral as possible, especially politically, as well as, of course, by ethnicity or by faith or religion. The humanitarian imperative, the needs, should be given priority, not other interests. And this one, we need sometimes to talk to not just governments, but also to our corporate partners and stakeholders. And humanity has to be at the center of this. So business interests, etc., we understand, for example, we value some of our corporate partners who've been with us for some time, yeah, very much. But we also hope that over the last 19 to 20 years or so, that 15 years or so maybe, that some of them have been with us as partners, we've also managed to bring them along this journey. And hopefully they see that while, yes, Mercy Malaysia and other organizations like ours understand that the private sector needs a bottom line that they need to see in all their endeavours. But they also understand that sometimes humanitarian action has to come with humanitarian principles first. So it's a long haul. It's not going to be easy. And that's why days like World Humanitarian Day on August 19th every year is important, at least as a marker. And this year's particular theme is civilians are not targets. So this one reflects very much more on the areas of conflict which we have around the world, and its emphasis there is on governments, especially on authorities. That even in conflict, there are rules, and civilians should, as much as possible, not be targeted. Mm. Yes.
What was your process like? What brought you to this line of humanitarian work, of offering yourself to the service of others?
Oh, well, myself in particular, I guess it was the idealism of humanitarian action, that you'll be able to help people without actually asking for anything in return, or at least nothing in reciprocal amount.
Did it come from a young age, or did it develop later in life because of a particular experience?
I guess both would be the correct answer. I've always been a person who was comfortable with people, and I believe most of our volunteers and most of our staff are people like that. There are exceptions, of course, and that's why we like to help people. But on the other hand, yes, I guess the later experiences that probably brought me closer to doing humanitarian work was probably the realization that in my professional life, and speaking as someone from the medical profession, I find that unfortunately or fortunately, as the world evolves and as the world changes, all professions, even as noble as medicine, also change. And the reality is nowadays, wherever you practice, most of the time you are practicing for a very professional and very hard reason, mostly for your own livelihood. Yes, and some of the idealism and some of the noble notions of being in a profession as noble as medicine is, still is, has unfortunately slipped away, and so it's a kind of a way for myself, and I'm sure a lot of my medical colleagues as well who are involved, not just with Mercy Malaysia but with other organisations, to actually redeem some part of that noble profession. Now, for others, I know, for example, the same goes with other colleagues in Mercy Malaysia, be they lawyers, architects, or even general workers. Yeah, the main thing is because they want to give and they want to help others. And here comes, I guess, a very important dichotomy and a very important paradox, if you like. As I was saying just now, a lot of this work has to be done well and has to be done in an organized and coordinated manner. So one of the misconceptions that the general public has, especially in a developing country like Malaysia, and especially in a country like Malaysia, which is free, thank God, from most big natural calamities, and we are free also from major conflict, is the need to be professional in humanitarian action, in humanitarian work. Now, Mercy Malaysia has a professional staff without which we cannot do the work that we do. Yes, we also use, as I said, and are very grateful and very honoured to have our large core of volunteers who, again, are an asset and are a tremendous asset for us, not just in terms of providing the actual aid on the field, but also in terms of propagating the idealism and the ideals of humanitarian action and of the organisation. But the reality is most of the work needs to be done professionally with systems and with organisation in place. And that needs professionalism. And that needs people who work full-time and sometimes part-time full-time or full-time part-time, which means they need to be paid. Okay. And so there is an operational cost to doing humanitarian work, at least doing it well and doing it professionally. Mercy Malaysia is committed to continue using volunteers going forward in the next decade or two at least. Yeah, we can't probably see much longer than that. Yeah, because we see the value in volunteers. As I said much earlier, there are organisations globally now which no longer use volunteers in their space for humanitarian action, but we do. But that does not negate the fact that not everything can be done voluntarily. And some of our volunteers sometimes become part-time staff in the field. Once somebody stays longer than a month in a particular field, area of work, we consider them someone who deserves some allowance at least, you know. And rightly so, because although they may be still be doing it voluntarily, we have to not only try and compensate them a bit, but also to honour and to acknowledge. It's not that we are able to give large amounts of remuneration, but it's just a meaningful contract, if you like, that makes the person more professional and more regarded, more highly regarded. So this is something which we hope over time people in Malaysia realize that there is a certain amount of what they give. The organizations like Mercy Malaysia will need to use for our expenditure. With Mercy Malaysia and with most other organizations, we will try to keep it to a minimum. But there has to be some. Otherwise, we won't be able to work.
You've been with Mercy since 2003, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yes. You're also a full-time consultant, respiratory physician. How much time do you devote to Mercy in a typical week?
Well, technically, it's 50-50, I suppose, yeah? But really, I'm on Mercy 24 hours a day. But of course, that's metaphorical, yeah? I mean, it's mainly my brains and my emotions, I guess. A lot of us in Mercy Malaysia who are in senior positions would like to do this full-time if it was possible. Some of us have got loads of experience. The thing is, of course, as I said, as the sector is not yet fully developed in Malaysia, a lot of our more senior people still have to work outside of Mercy. I believe this is the same for a lot of other Malaysian organisations as well. A lot of them younger than us. A lot of them came after Mercy Malaysia started this wave of interest in humanitarian action when we were founded in 1999. There are also a few other organisations who were older than us who were founded even before Mercy Malaysia, before Tan Sri Jamilah and friends founded the organisation in 1999. But they are also still in the same mode, meaning a lot of their senior people sit on the executive board, for example, contribute a lot of time, a lot of energy, etc., but are still doing it voluntarily, as are most of us in Mercy Malaysia. We hope one day the situation changes enough to allow for at least some of these people to do this work professionally, so that they can actually give a lot more and improve the impact and the work that's done by these organisations, including by Mercy Malaysia. But coming back to myself, at the moment, yes. For the last decade or so, I've been juggling. I've not been alone. As I said, there are colleagues of mine in Mercy on the executive board, as well as core volunteers who do the same. When people ask us how we do it, we never shy away from saying that it's not easy. It's not easy with difficulty, but it's something that we treasure and wouldn't exchange for anything. In a way, it helps us focus because the time we have for Mercy, for example, is limited in a way. So you can akin some of us to being unpaid part-time workers, if you like, with Mercy Malaysia. But we need to optimise the time. So, you know, if we want to set a meeting, for example, for an important thing to be discussed, we need to make sure that we use that time well, and we need to use that time profitably from an organizational as well as personal perspective. So we don't waste time. Yeah. So we have a lot of meetings, for example, over lunch, over tea. We use these...
Kill two birds with one stone.
Yes, killing two or three birds with one stone.
Yeah. Do you see it as a sacrifice? Because obviously everyone has 24 hours in a day, time spent on non-work matters or away from families is something that you have to consider as well.
Oh, yes. And this is why, going back to the core of the matter again, this is why over time we hope to educate the Malaysian public that there is a need for organisations like Mercy Malaysia, a real need, yeah, to have that core professional staff, which we have. We hope we will not be, and we know that humanitarian organisations cannot do it anyway, cannot expand beyond our means. Yeah, there's no way we can do that because most of the time the funding that we get is for the aid that we give. But there is a need to have these people at the core of our organisation, and they are, in a way, these people who are full time with us are also sacrificing. Because the sector is not well developed, they need also to be committed to the work that they do with possibly a little less remuneration or benefits than they would probably get if they were working elsewhere. Now, on top of that, people like myself, having realized that these people who are our full-time workers have also sacrificed in a way, we also take it upon ourselves. Yes, it is a sacrifice. A lot of us lose some things which I guess cannot be replaced. You cannot replace time with your family, for example. It will never come back. But it is a sacrifice which, for most of us, we are willing to make.
Yeah. Mercy Malaysia turns 20 next year. You've been leading it since 2009, so what message would you like to leave? What does the future hold?
I'd like to... First of all, thank Malaysians from all walks of life for having stood with Mercy Malaysia and having believed in us, yeah, and in the humanitarian cause. I also would like to take this opportunity to say to Malaysians, as we grow as a nation in this new age of Malaysia, that while we look after ourselves and our country, and Mercy Malaysia, for example, does do a lot of work, as I alluded to earlier, in our country as well. Yeah? You'll be surprised to see the needs and the gaps that are still there in the interior parts of both the peninsula and Sabah and Sarawak, as well as the new phenomenon of urbanisation and the urban poor that urbanisation brings. Yeah? Mercy Malaysia is also involved in some of that work. I'd like to call upon Malaysians, apart from looking after ourselves, improving and enhancing our people and our country, not to forget that we have a responsibility also as human beings to other human beings, to our fellow human beings. They may be here with us as refugees, as asylum seekers. They may be out there in other countries as well. And to help them is actually an honour and a privilege that if we as Malaysians take it upon ourselves that this is something that we need to do, it is actually an honour and privilege accorded to us, not a burden. And the more we give, the world and fate, if you believe in it, has a way of turning the right way eventually. And the more we give and the more good we do, the more good will come back to us. I'd also like to take this opportunity also to look forward, yeah, and hope that the humanitarian sector in Malaysia will grow and that organisations like Mercy Malaysia and others will continue to grow and become better, become more dynamic and can truly sit and stand at par with other international humanitarian relief organisations, both in terms of quality as well as the impact of the work that we do.
If everyone gives more than they take, I think the world will be a better place. That's the message I'm taking away from this conversation today. Dr. Faisal, thank you so much
thank
for
you,
speaking to me today.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.